We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Hello, everybody. It's Maria Boynton. We have lost a civil rights icon, Dr. Lonnie King. He passed last week. He was considered a visionary. I am here with a 60-year friend, Charles Black. How are you doing?
Well, I'm kind of hanging in there. The fact that I've stayed very busy with arrangements and preparations and all for Lonnie's homegoing has been a salvation for me, and that it didn't allow me the extra time and emotion to grieve. So it was not until the cemetery that the waterfall came. Lonnie and I were very close. He often told me that I was his best friend, and we go back a very long way.
And when we say you go back a very long way, you all were students in Atlanta.
Yes, we were both at Morehouse College. Lonnie had been at Morehouse earlier and had left to go into the Navy for about 3 years because he found that his mother was working three jobs to keep him in school. And he didn't want that, so he went to the Navy so he could return on the GI Bill. And we met. Well, I was aware of him before we had actually encountered each other, because he was an outstanding football player, running back on the Morehouse football team. And he knew of me because I was on the newspaper staff and a debater and a few other things. So when our movement started, he came up to me on the campus and invited me to a meeting. And so I was involved right from the start with our Atlanta student movement activities here.
What do you remember about him when it came to the Atlanta student movement? What do you think drove him to want to do more for the betterment of society?
Well, one of the things Lonnie would often say was that he was born looking up at the bottom. He came to Atlanta when he was 8 years old from somewhere down south Georgia, I forget. And he says that he and his mother lived in a little place behind the fish market in an alley over near Capitol Avenue somewhere. And that his bedroom was, in fact, the pantry for the kitchen. He slept on a mallet mattress or whatever in the pantry. That was his bedroom. And when he went into the Navy, he experienced some overt racism. He stood up to it there and gained respect from others, not all, but from some of the others. And so when he came back, he had a will to change things. And he was looking for a spark, like many of us were. And after the young men sat in Greensboro, North Carolina, the very next day he began approaching folks saying, you know, we need to do that here. And I was one of those folk that he approached, and about a couple of dozen of us met that next night on Morehouse campus and began planning our efforts here in Atlanta.
Tell me about those efforts. What are some of the times that you remember when you all were, I guess you could say, in the trenches, and you had to remain strong? Wasn't easy, but you were in the trenches.
Yeah, interesting thing, though, was that we felt empowered, mm-hmm. perhaps to a greater extent than we had in our lives before. Many of us were from the South. I was from Miami, Florida, where the racism was not as harsh, but it existed. You couldn't go to places, and you had riding back in a bus and all that. But I'd never seen a Confederate flag on display until I was arriving in Atlanta on a train and saw it on the side of a building. In 1958. That was a shocker to me. And so we had all had experiences that made us unhappy about our state. And we were the generation that followed what was called the greatest generation. our parents and uncles and aunts and all that had gone abroad to make democracy safe for America and fought in the world's war to end all wars. And in many cases, they experienced some better treatment abroad than they had back home. But they also experienced a lot of racism from their comrades. They were unhappy when they came back, and we were born to rebel, as Dr. Mays said in his book. More aware, perhaps, than we might have been of the changes that need to be made. So when the chance came and there was a spark, we were ready to fan that flame. And so we did.
The lunchroom counter was one spark. What would you say were others for you and Lonnie King?
Well, when we had our first sit-ins, it was actually at 11 different facilities on the same day at 11 o'clock in the morning. Lunch counters were among them, but train stations, city hall, state capitol, county courthouse, and 5 and 10 stores as well as department stores. And once we had fought that battle for a year and ended up desegregating them, after I became chairman following Lonnie, we took on the movie theaters and desegregated them. We took on the hospitals and desegregated them. We took over the NAACP. And during the time we were with the NAACP, we formed what was called a broadcast coalition. And that resulted in the first blacks on air. Jocelyn Dorsey was one of them. And we had Monica Kaufman here because of those efforts. And she beat out Oprah Winfrey for that job, as a matter of fact, at Channel 2. Also were the initiators of what became known as the Freedom Rides. When the ruling had been made that segregation in interstate transportation was unconstitutional, we decided to test that. And that's why we were still students. And we went to the connecting states to Georgia. Reverend Dr. Otis Moss and I went to Aiken, South Carolina, the two of us, riding behind the driver on a Greyhound bus. And we had a stop in Athens, Georgia, and we were supposed to be there for 20 minutes, but after about 5 minutes, our bus was called to leave. And as soon as we got back on the bus and the door was closed, we saw like three carloads of college-age white boys with baseball bats and the like going into the waiting room looking for us. So we were, you know, spared that beating. But others in some of the other buses were beaten and some were jailed. We went on to Aiken, South Carolina, and our chase car finally got there. It seemed like 10 days later, although it was probably about 15 minutes, but the bus station was closed, and so we were standing out there in the dark. So that was among the things that we did. We also had a major voter registration campaign in the summer of 1961 that resulted in adding about 20,000 new black voters to the rolls, and that was a big factor in the election of Ivan Allen over Lester Maddox that year. During the time that I was editor of the Atlanta Inquirer newspaper, we continued various crusades. Lonnie started all this stuff. You know, I was trying to study my lessons and date girls to Spelman, mind my own business. But Lonnie got me into all this stuff. But anyhow, we ended up getting a white policeman fired for police brutality through the Atlanta Inquirer. We forced Ivan Allen to take down a barrier on Peyton Road in Eutaw Springs that he'd put up to keep blacks from infringing into white residential areas. And it became national news, international news, I would imagine. And he was forced to take it down because of the pressure. And former Mayor Hartsfield said to him later, I sent a photographer over to take a picture of it, and I ran across the front of the Inquirer. And I called it the Peyton Wall. And so Ivan Allen said, Hartsfield said to Ivan Allen sometime later, never make a mistake that can be photographed. That forced him to take that down. Ivan Allen ended up being the only Southern elected official, white elected official, to speak in support of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Another thing that we achieved was that when Charles Longstreet Weltner, was congressman from the 5th District, the same district that John Lewis now represents, I had helped him to get elected, and he voted against the Civil Rights Bill the first time around. And he was my friend, but I had a column that I wrote on a regular basis, a personal column in the paper called Subjectively Speaking. And I wrote this article about him and his vote, and it was called Young, White, and 21. And, of course, the thesis of it was that he was young, white, and 21, didn't need a civil rights bill. The rest of us did. And I saw him 2 years before he died, and he referenced that article and told me that that was the reason he changed his vote. And he did vote for the Civil Rights Act the second time around.
What do you remember about your friend, Lonnie King, as a leader and as your friend? What will you remember most about him?
Lonnie King was a very selfless person, a very visionary person, as the article says here. He was a natural leader because people respected his wisdom and his leadership. It was clear that he had thought through what he was asking others to do, and he was prepared to put himself out front. I was with him over in the West End when he had acid thrown in his face. And we kept marching. He was almost blinded, the doctor said, if he hadn't been wearing large sunglasses. But he was, you know, on the front line out there. He was always prepared to be on the front line. He had a deep, deep commitment, even in his latter years, and continued to provide leadership and mentoring to current generation of students. And I was with him throughout a lot of that, students at, in the Atlanta University Center, at Georgia State, at Kennesaw State, and other schools around. And there's a freedom school called Freedom University that I chair the advisory committee of, and that works with undocumented students who are denied admission into the top schools in Georgia. And we prepare them for entrance into the best schools in the country, help them with their SAT preparation and that sort of thing. Many of them are getting, you know, free rides, full rides to Dartmouth and Harvard and places like that. And it's a brain loss for the state. But Lonnie has taught some of those classes, and he's mentored the leaders at Freedom University. And there's a young man who would be at the memorial service on tomorrow whose name is Jonathan Wall. We met him when he was a freshman at Morehouse, and Lonnie took him under his wings and mentored him. We formed a charter school together at one point when he was on our board. He went on to get a degree in law, and he is going to be a civil rights lawyer. But he was a key mentee of Lonnie King's, and he is coming from out of town to be here tomorrow. In honor of King.
That young man, no doubt, will remember Lonnie King. What do you hope his legacy will be for many generations to come?
Well, I think the most important thing is that you do what's right all the time, and you do it irrespective of what others are prepared or not prepared to do. And you recognize that everybody's not going to want to do all the same things that need to be done. And you accept the fact that whatever they're doing, however big or small, a piece of the pie is still a piece of the pie. Get the pie baked. Lonnie understood that. He was also a guy who didn't care who got the credit. And that's a neat little secret for great leadership. If you let everybody take the bows they want to take for doing what they did, you can get a lot done. But he garnered a tremendous amount of respect because of the strength of his personality and the strength and depth of his commitment. So people were willing to listen to him and to follow him. You hear people talk about foot soldiers in the movement. Lonnie was a general, a five-star general in this movement, and everybody respected him as such. You know, the rest of us may have been, you know, 1-2-star generals or lieutenants or colonels and that sort of thing, but Lonnie was a 5-star general. We all refer to him as our leader, our hero. He'll be greatly missed.
Charles Black, I thank you, sir, for your time.
Thank you so much.
I'm Maria Boynton reporting.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.